All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Quill and Query podcast. My name is Brandon Hall, and as always, I'm joined today by my wonderful co-host, Ash. Ash, how are you doing today?
I'm doing as well as I can. How are you doing, Brandon?
I am doing great, especially because we have a very special guest on Quill and Query today, a first in Quill and Query history. So I'm not going to steal her thunder, though. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, a very special guest.
Sure. Hi, guys. Thanks so much for having me. My name is Tess Irondale. I'm an actor and narrator. I've been narrating audiobooks since 2013. I've worked on about 300 titles across pretty much every genre that exists. I'm most well known, though, for my work in fantasy and lit RPG. I work with publishers like Penguin, Harper, Simon & Schuster, and Podium. But I also work directly with independent authors who are doing their own thing. I live narrate pretty much every day over on my audiobook Discord server. So for anyone who's interested in listening in on how the process goes, you're very welcome to join. I'm super happy to meet you both. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for being here.
We're super excited to ask you a ton of questions about the audiobook narration process. I think Ash and I both got a little taste of how you work earlier today and yesterday, so that was very fun. But before we dive into all of our interview questions, Tess, we like to kind of break these interviews with, you know, a little bit of an icebreaker question. So besides, you know, you sound like a very busy person, besides narrating audiobooks all day and just being amazing at what you do, what have you been up to in the world of pop culture? Do you read frequently in your off time, or do you find that that's something, you know, you're doing that all day for work, so you prefer to wind down with maybe a TV show or something else?
I actually read a ton. I find it really soothing after a long day of work, but what I read is entirely different from what I narrate. I mostly narrate fiction, but I love reading nonfiction. I also really love long form journalism. So like I read a lot of The Atlantic and The New Yorker, but right now I've got two nonfiction books going. I'm reading this book, Team of Rivals, about the Lincoln administration. And I'm reading this book called Savage Beauty about the poet Edna St. Vincent Millay. Yeah. That's sort of it. And you know, I'm also reading the book that I'm in the midst of narrating. And I'm reading the three books that I have coming up most immediately on my calendar. And I'm reading a couple of scripts that have been sent to me for my perusal, authors who've queried me about potentially working with them. So yeah, I've got a lot on my plate. What are you guys reading?
I was going to say, do you have like an Excel tracker to track like what you're reading and working on at the same time? Like I would get so overwhelmed, but it sounds like you've got a good like flow with that kind of stuff. I'd be like, oh, what do I choose? What do I choose? Do you have like a tracker of any kind?
You know, yeah, for sure. I'm getting a little bit of a lag with you guys, so I'm not sure. Does it sound like I'm hearing you after you talk? Like your voices aren't syncing with your faces, so I can't tell what I'm responding to.
It seems synced for me, but
okay, good. I'm not gonna watch your faces. Then I'm just gonna like listen and respond to the voices I hear, because right now it's sort of like all off.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah, I do. I have a ton of organizational tactics to sort of help me manage the, you know, I'm booked out right now through May of 2026, I think. Mm-hmm. So I don't even know how many projects that is. So I've got that all on the calendar. And then I keep a running log of sort of the most pressing things that I have to prep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that helps me stay organized. But I've been doing this a long time, so I've finally honed it down to a bit of a science.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I'm just very impressed by all of that. Well, I am currently reading an advanced copy called Our Rogue Fates, and it's pretty good so far. It's like a gay fantasy, which I love. Brandon, what are you reading?
I am actually taking a little break from reading because I have read about halfway through The Trouble with Peace, and I finished A Little Hatred and The Devils right before that, kind of back to back. So I needed a little bit of a break. Right now I'm actually watching Alien Earth. I know that has nothing to do with reading, but that's what is occupying most of my leisure time with media consumption at the moment. Also, sorry if I spaced out there for a minute. I had to send the updated YouTube link because they changed it on me.
That's okay.
So, yeah, the pre-scheduled live did not work as intended. So, sorry, everyone, but I did just share the link again in all the same places. So, hopefully
no worries.
Everyone caught that. But yeah, no, Tess, I totally get the breaking up the fiction reading with nonfiction. That's something I like to do as well. I find that if I read like a lot of fantasy, breaking it up with something like historical or just more in the realm of nonfiction keeps me interested longer than if I were to read like fantasy back to back all the time. All right. Well, I think we can go ahead and dive into our interview questions. I'm going to kick us off here with this first one. So, Tess, you said you've been narrating since 2013, which is a long time. So tell us a little bit about how you got started in audiobook narration. Like, did this come from a background in like voice acting or a different type of performance? Or did you really just start in narration?
Yeah, I've been an actor my whole life. I acted as a child, and that's what I studied in college. I went to a conservatory for theater. And I was working in a show in New York, and someone from Audible, who works with Audible, saw me in it and suggested I audition. I had done some narration for documentary film, and I'd done some radio plays, and a little bit of animation prior to that. So it wasn't a completely new thing, but but in a way it was. And so I auditioned in person out at Audible headquarters. These days, I think people consider Audible to be a platform, but they're also a major, major producer of audiobooks. And back then, they were probably the leading producer of audiobooks. So I sat in a dark room with their lead producer, and he handed me a stack of books with little post-it notes in them. And I read a bunch of little excerpts for him from different genres. And I remember him saying, "Oh, wow, you can do everything," which obviously made me very pleased. And that was the start of it. I worked sort of sporadically in the beginning. It was never something I was sort of actively pursuing. I just sort of worked on the books that came my way when they did. But things shifted a bit for me when home recording became possible. That's when my schedule really began to be filled, because it was so easy to work from home as opposed to, you know, taking the train and, you know, 90 minutes to go to a studio to work.
Yeah, totally. I can see how that would make it easier. Ashley, I think you had a follow-up for this one, so I'll let you go ahead. And
yeah. Can you describe or kind of expand on how audiobook narration differs from maybe like an onstage play or even a radio play situation? I'm sure there's a lot of overlap, but I'm curious where you've seen the main differences in those two.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to sort of there is obviously overlap between audiobooks and every performance avenue. I mean, film, TV, theater, all of it, in terms of the way I approach the work with authenticity and always wanting to be my most truthful. Radio plays and podcasts and animation are so different because you're just sort of working as a character, as opposed to having the responsibility of telling the entire story and sort of being this all-knowing force behind the whole world of the book. So in a sense, they're really different, but in a lot of ways, they're very much the same. Radio plays and animation have a lot in common with like duet audiobook narration, where I'm just narrating, for example, the female voices in a book. But yeah, audiobooks are really singular. They are very much their own sort of art form.
Makes sense.
So we touched a little bit on, you said that when you started, the recording environment was a lot different. Now you're able to do that at home. Are there any other parts of the narration process that you've noticed have changed over time, become easier or maybe even harder? But just what's the evolution of the process been like for you?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. I mean, artistically, when I first started, I had absolutely no idea what, what I was doing. I hadn't ever read or listened to an audiobook. I was given no coaching, no guidance whatsoever. I actually didn't even record my first audiobook at Audible Studios. I was doing a show. I was out of town. So they coordinated with a sound studio in the city I was in and set me up with an engineer who didn't know what he was doing either. I mean, he was a sound engineer, but he hadn't worked on an audiobook previously. Mm. Had I been in person at Audible, the engineer would have been able to guide me a little bit, but I had no idea what I was doing. So obviously my process has changed dramatically because I've made so many mistakes. And I've also now at this point narrated thousands upon thousands of hours of audio. Mm. The industry has shifted hugely, and I think it's worth noting that. I mean, it's been really fantastic for authors because it's brought in a new revenue stream that sort of didn't exist in the same way previously. During COVID and in the years since, audiobook sales have boomed. I mean, it's like everyone's getting into audiobooks now. Sales have, mm-hmm. have ballooned. They're in the billions of dollars now. I mean, it's absolutely absurd how much money is coming in for audiobooks. And it's really exciting that there's so much interest in that. I think it exposes people to books in a way that they might not have experienced if they were just trying to read their books. So that part of the industry has changed a lot. Obviously, with that comes a shift in the way the mechanism of the industry works in terms of casting. Mm-hmm. When I started, there were really a handful of us doing it. It was just a bunch of actors from New York and a few actors from elsewhere. But with this great demand for audio, they need more and more narrators. And I think as a consequence of COVID and then the actors and writer strikes, so many people have gotten into it. People who don't have acting backgrounds have gotten into it. And so there's now this huge breadth of talent out there. So that has sort of changed, I think, the way we navigate getting jobs just a little bit. It's a little more, it can be a little more laborious sometimes. And then on a technical level, I myself have just developed a lot of great habits along the way that sort of help me shepherd a book. I've come up with, you know, all sorts of tech hacks for myself. And as I said, I've made every mistake imaginable as a narrator, from, you know, accidentally deleting a day's work to reading a book close enough and discovering someone has an accent on page 235 after you've recorded the whole book.
I didn't
have any mentors when I got into it. Nowadays, there's a huge network and community of audiobook narrators. There are classes, there are free videos, there are all kinds of workshops and organizations where you can connect with people. There are narrators who work regularly on TikTok who you can just watch, and like myself on Discord. But I had no one to learn from, so I had to make all these mistakes on my own. So, it's hard to describe sort of the seismic shift, both in how I work personally, but also just in the industry as a whole.
Yeah, it sounds like there's been a lot of change both for you personally and then just with how big audiobooks have become. But it's nice to hear that the deleting your work thing does not apply only to authors. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've experienced that for sure.
Yeah.
All right, well, Ash,
I'm so sorry. The audio is like a little, we're a little off the lag, so I don't know if I'm interrupting you, but have you two transitioned any of your work into audiobooks? Have you had that experience as an author?
Not yet, no.
No.
I've wanted to, so my only published work really right now is the Blaze for Hire anthology, and I just have a short story in there. I did like organize the anthology. Ash is in there as well as a lot of other authors on Book Talk as well. We did not prioritize an audiobook version yet because all of the proceeds were going to charity, so it limited funding for an audiobook version. But that is definitely something I want to explore, both with Blades for Hire in the future, and then obviously with every other work that hopefully comes out one day.
Yeah, pretty much the same here. Also, sorry if you hear someone mowing the lawn. Of course, they started right as we started. Yeah, it's funny because we were talking in the chat earlier, Tess, that earlier today, you know, even writing, I will record myself reading things out loud, despite not having any audiobook out. And I've found that it really helps. And then you said also that you have caught things for authors and will sometimes let them know if you catch things. So I've caught things just reading out loud. And I think we forget that, you know, it can be a really good tool, not just for listeners, obviously, to read more books or to listen to more books, but as writers as well.
Well, I will tackle this next question, Ash, and then I will let you ask your, I think you have two follow-ups for this one, so I'll let you tackle both of those. So we talked a little bit about how the process has changed, Tess. So looking at it from, I guess, today's perspective, how do you go about preparing a new narration project for a book? Is it like, do you have to read the book all the way through, or do you kind of skim it? Like, what is the process like when you pick up a new project?
That's a really good question. How granular do you want to go? I mean, I can really give you all the
up to you
the nitty gritty.
As detailed as you want to get. So
let's see. I work in a lot of different ways. I work, well, really two ways. So I work directly with authors, and I also work directly with publishers. And the experience of those sort of avenues of work are a little different. When I work with a publisher, it's the simplest process. They give me a script. They give me a info sheet sometimes that the author has filled out with some character information, maybe ages of characters, some pronunciations. Often I'm given absolutely no information. When I'm working with a publisher, I have zero contact with the author. The publisher sort of works as the middleman. When I'm working independently with an author, either on a platform like ACX or something like that, it's a little different. But the way that I prep the script is pretty much the same. So yes, to answer your question, I do read every script I do. It's time consuming, but I would say what I do is essentially a speed read, because at this point I really know what I'm looking for in the script. There are some scenarios where I don't fully read the script. That can be like if I get a really last minute book jammed into my schedule and I honestly just don't have the time to do it. There are audiobook preppers that you can hire, and they're fantastic. I mean, you're spending money on that, but they will provide you with a spreadsheet with a breakdown of every single chapter, what happens, who's in it, any word you might need a pronunciation on, any descriptors for characters. They'll give you a whole character sheet telling you who everyone is, telling you the themes of the book. I mean, it's incredibly, incredibly useful. And it's very much possible, I think, to deliver a real authentic lived-in performance with that as a tool. But I believe that I deliver my best work and can best serve the author by reading the book. There's something about just absorbing it. I sort of really need to know the feeling of the book, if that makes sense. Every book sort of has a different tone, a different sense of humor, a different style. And just getting the facts of what happens and who's on the page doesn't always communicate sort of the voice of the author. So yes, I read everything. So in my little speed read, I'll call it, I am looking for any descriptors for characters in terms of their physicality, because that can inform my vocal choices for the character. You know, if someone is very, very large, their voice is going to be very different than if they're a fairy. You know,
<Yeah.
laughs> I want to know sort of what they look like. Also, because, and this has bitten me in the ass before, I am very meticulous about noting every physical characteristic, because sometimes you'll get to a scene and it'll be a scene with five women. I'll say, you know, Rhonda said this, Jill said that, and then it'll say, the red-haired woman said. And you're like, fuck, the red hair. So and you know, this can happen in book seven of a series, and you're like, oh, wait, who had the red hair? Obviously, in a situation like that, I just go to my publisher or my author, and I'm like, who's talking? But so I take note of all those things. I log that in a database, and then I also highlight in the script for myself any descriptor words about people's voices, husky, soft, anything about he whispered, she yelled like a raging waterfall, you know, anything like that that I really want to hew to in my performance. Yeah, so that's sort of how I prep the script. And then once I'm in the process of recording, I have over the years used different databases for my books to keep track of characters, because I work on so much fantasy and those books can go on for years and years and years. And sometimes I'll record one book 1 year and the next book 2 years later. And so having a database of some sort has become integral to my process. And I was a little overconfident early on and was like, I'll remember this. I'll remember his voice.
Oh,
no,
yeah,
I will forget. So now after using spreadsheets and Word docs and all kinds of things, I now use, there's this company called Positron that provides proofing for narrators. But one of the great functions that they offer is a database that integrates with your audio. So not only can you record voice samples and make notes about characters' physical appearances, but you can also track down voices if you have been overconfident like me and forgotten to record the voice for a character in book one, or, for example, a character pops up in book 12 and it's like the sword maker from the little village who didn't have a name, so you didn't think to put him in your database. But you can then look back in your audio and track it down really quickly. So that has been one of those sort of technical developments and hacks that I've integrated into my workflow that's, I can't imagine living without it at this point. What else? Oh, when I'm working directly with an author, obviously I meet with them before narration. I want to hear about the book and how it came to be, and I give them a character sheet where they can fill out as much as they want to about the characters or as little as they want to. Some authors say it's all up to you. Some authors have really, really distinct ideas. I obviously ask them if there's is this going to be a series and which characters will return? Because, again, sometimes that sword maker, you totally discount, and then they're a major character in book five. Sometimes I also receive extensive pronunciation guides from my authors. Other authors don't give a shit and they say, it's totally up to you, make it up. But I have found that the more meticulous I am in my recording, the more it will sort of serve me down the line, especially with these series. Because there's just nothing worse than fucking up a character. You know, one other element that I didn't figure out for a few years is to do a word search in the document for the words accent. dialect,
clever
voice, the words older and younger I've started using, because sometimes they'll be like two guards and you've been doing these two guards voices for 100 pages, and then it, all of a sudden it'll say the older guard said and you've been playing him like he's dang, you know, 19. So yeah, those are two other words that I've integrated. I know a lot of narrators who, when they're offered romance-y books, use the word search function for a lot of dirty words just to get the scope of the project. But yeah, that's pretty much the recording process. When I'm working with an author individually, there's sort of a whole element to the production itself, but that's just me in the booth.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So intense. I mean, you assume that this is like the process, at least little bits and pieces, but it's amazing that, you know, you read most of it to make sure you're doing the best job possible. It's very impressive. I had a follow-up. When you are doing character voices, I know there's a lot that goes into it. You are narrating more than just character voices, but are you trying to embody a character by what you know, or are you just trying to guide the listener through the story, as in, like, this is how I'm going to tell the story through the character's voice, or are you trying to, like, be the character? I hope that made sense.
You know, the character voices sort of come to me fully formed. You know how, well, maybe for me, when I read a book, I hear the characters. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of feel like that character voice is just feeding through me. I don't ever want the book to be about my performance. I'm trying to do as much as I can to serve the book. So I try to use all the guidelines that the author gives me in the text to outline who this character is. I never want to be adding to it in a way that doesn't exist on the page, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. That's interesting. I think that pretty much answers my second follow-up question, Brandon. She already got there. So if you want to ask the next one, go for it.
Yeah, so I'll jump ahead a little bit. Tess, tell us, what is your favorite part of the narration process? What do you find to be the most fun? And then what do you look forward to the least? What's the most challenging aspect of it for you?
I mean, in general, this job is a real gift. I'm so fortunate to make my living, you know, playing make-believe, essentially. The thing that I find most fun is working on excellent writing. That makes the job feel really effortless. It's such a gift to work with fantastic writers, and they're always just sort of landing in my lap. It's so fun to just get a new script and be blown away by it. So that's the most fun part, is when you're working on just great writing that surprises you and moves you and really makes it clear to me what my job is in terms of translating it into someone's ears. I also really love that this is a small community. The narrator, the world of narrators, as much as it's grown relative to what it was before, still feels like a small community. And my producers and publishers feel like they're part of that. And it's really nice to spend so much time with people who've devoted their lives to books. I think that's really beautiful. Let's see, what's most challenging? I think not being able to ingest as much coffee and red wine as I would like, because it can mess with my voice.
Didn't know that.
You know, it's tricky because my voice changes every day based on the humidity and how much water I've had the night before and how much I've slept and stress and what I've eaten. Yeah. You know, it changes throughout the day and it changes seasonally with fucking allergies. And that's frustrating. I wish that every day when I walked in the booth, my voice was in its peak form with its full range and I could do everything I wanted. one of the real benefits of home narration is that I don't always have to work linearly. When I'm working mm-hmm. in studio, you just read the book straight through. Mm-hmm. What I realized, and again, this was a hack that I discovered 10 years into narrating, I suddenly realized, oh, this is a hard chapter. I can just skip this chapter and do the chapter 3 chapters from now that's really easy mm-hmm. on my voice and mm-hmm. requires fewer vocal gymnastics. So now that's my technique. If you come and listen to me on Discord, every now and then I'll just say, guys, I'm skipping a few chapters. I'm skipping ahead. We're going to deal with, for example, the book I'm doing now, all these men fighting and yelling tomorrow morning. I generally save a lot of my romancy stuff for the first thing in the morning because my voice is a little huskier and richer. Nice. It's why I don't often record later in the day. I have some female narrator friends whose voices entirely change when they're on their cycle.
Really?
It can be really frustrating. So, yeah, I mean, the way hormones affect your vocal cords in terms of inflammation can be really detrimental to your entire vocal range. So that's really frustrating. And obviously getting sick is a horror. I mean, I'm booked so far in advance, back to back, with very little or no time in between. And if I get sick, it puts so much pressure on me because it pushes everything back. Then I've got 30 projects that I feel like have been pushed back, and then I have to make up the time and I have to rush and I have to strain my voice. And so I'm incredibly paranoid about getting sick. So yes, I feel bad that I spent more time talking about what is challenging about the job than what is fun, but there you have it.
I think it's very clear that you are very passionate about it and you enjoy it very much. So I don't think you need to worry about that. But no, it's very interesting because you forget when you're not someone who's using their voice, you know, for work, how many different factors can affect just how you sound. And it sounds like you find a way to work through it a lot of times. All right, I'm going to jump ahead here to a different question. So I wanted to make sure I get these two before our time is up today. So you said you work with publishers and authors both. So when you are working with an independent author, is there anything, I guess, any type of advice you could give to maybe a self-published author who's looking to work with a narrator, like anything they should keep in mind, or just if this is their first time, what they should know going into it, aside from everything we've already touched on?
Yeah, so much. I mean, the business side of things is its whole conversation, and I think it's just worth saying that you have several options in terms of making your audiobook. You can work directly with a narrator. You can work with a production house who will handle every aspect of production for you, including casting and marketing and editing and everything. And you can work with a publisher. And there are publishers who just work with authors on audiobooks. So even if your book hasn't been published, you can still get your audiobook published by them. So it's worth noting that there are options. In terms of working with a narrator, there is so much I wish I could impart. So generally, when indie authors are wanting to make their own audiobook, they go to ACX, which I'm sure you guys know. It's the Audiobook Creation Exchange. It's a subsidiary of Audible. It is a platform where narrators can post their profiles, authors can go hold auditions, list their book, just peruse profiles. You can also, if you have a narrator that you love, find them directly, work with them directly. You don't have to work on the ACX platform. You can always just find a narrator through their website and reach out to them. They may opt to work through ACX or just have an independent contract with you. In terms of casting, though, I think there's a lot that authors maybe don't know that they don't know. First of all, I think it's worth understanding that this is our job, is to make lots of different voices and tell stories in a myriad of ways. And if you don't hear the voice you're looking for right away, ask them to do another version of it. So if you're holding an audition, don't just say, that's not how he sounds, that's not how she sounds. If you have a narrator you're interested in, it's worth coming back to them and saying, your read was really interesting to me. I'm curious, can you make her sound younger? Can you make him sound older? The other thing you can do to sort of even preempt that is to provide anyone auditioning for your book with as much information possible about the audition scene as you can. Tell them ages, genders, tell them people's personality types, tell them the relationships between the people in the book. I can't tell you how many times an author has asked me to audition for something, given me two pages and given me no context. I don't know who's a man or a woman. I know nothing about the characters. Most times I'll go back to them and ask for that information. Sometimes if I'm in a rush or if it feels really straightforward, I'll just sort of bang out the audition. And then, you know, the author will say, oh, that's not how she sounds. And I say, well, how, tell me how you would like her to sound, because, you know, I can do it all. So I think that just remembering how flexible we are is really important. Mm. I think that if there's a narrator you're really interested in, and you think they're out of your price range, it's okay to ask them. I make a lot of concessions for different kinds of projects. I think a lot of people assume I'm out of their price range because I am paid a very high amount by some of my publishers. But every now and then, I'll finish a book ahead of schedule. I'll end up with four open days in my schedule. Mm. And in that moment, someone will reach out to me and say, can you do my book? It's this, you know, collection of short stories. I'll say, sure, what's your budget? And, you know, as long as it meets my union minimums, then I'm perfectly happy to work on it with them. So I never want people to think that narrators are out of reach. I think we all work in different ways. And for me, it's really important to work with writers in all sort of tiers of their career. And so obviously I work with best-selling authors and I love working with new authors. So no, don't ever be shy about reaching out. I think it's also important for authors to make it clear to their narrator what kind of artistic working relationship they're looking for. Generally, in professional narration, we are given the script and we are sent off to go do our thing. There's not a lot of back and forth between author. You know, authors aren't hearing chapters, they're not hearing voice samples, aside from for, you know, I guess in the world of ACX, you provide a 15-minute sample. So I think if an author is very keen on being deeply involved in the process, it's important for them to tell their prospective narrator that, because a lot of narrators don't work in that way. A lot of narrators are accustomed to just taking the script and doing their thing. So make sure expectations are clear, especially because when you enter into a relationship with a narrator, if it's a series, this is a long relationship. You know, it could go on for years and you want to be working with someone that you like and where the boundaries are really, really clear. Yeah. Do you guys have any other specific questions about like that part of the work?
I think you covered a lot of what I was thinking, so I don't have any additional questions, but I'll let Ash share if she has.
This is such a new realm of information to me that I wouldn't even know what follow-up question to ask in that regard. But I think it's generally good advice, especially the specificity. At least I would worry about pigeonholing my narrator too much into what specifically I have in my head. And I think it's kind of cool to be like, what if she sounds different to readers? You know, if a character sounds different to reader and you give me a voice and I go, actually, that sounds way more like her than I thought it did. You know what I mean? So the specificity part of it is interesting and also very cool, because yeah, I feel like it still opens up the realm of possibility if someone maybe doesn't know in their own head what they're supposed to sound like too. So, but no, I don't have any follow-up questions in that regard.
Yeah. Right, I would just also like to add, one more thing.
Yeah.
I just want to add that for, especially for new authors, you know, obviously AI and virtual voice is a huge part of the conversation right now and everything that's going on with Audible. I think it's really worth promoting the fact that you can get an audiobook narrator, a human, to narrate your book for free. Mm-hmm. You have many options on ACX. You can hire a narrator per finished hour, where you're just paying them, obviously, per finished hour. Mm-hmm. You can also hire a narrator for a royalty share plus agreement, where you'll split the royalties, and you'll also provide the narrator with a smaller per finished hour payment to cover the expense of, for example, the editor, because many narrators outsource their editors. Most narrators that I know don't do their own editing. Only if they're sort of in the earlier stages of their career do they do that. And then there's straight up royalty share, where there is no money exchanged. You go on ACX or, you know, whatever other platform you want to work on. You connect with the right narrator and you just share royalties. So that is no money out of pocket. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to note that, because I think a lot of new authors are intimidated by the expense. There's a lot of misinformation about the cost out there. Mm-hmm. Every narrator charges a different rate. And some people charge $200 per finished hour. Some people charge $500 per finished hour. Some people charge more. And so the rates to create an audiobook can vary from $0 to, you know, thousands upon thousands. Mm-hmm. But there are options for everyone. And what a human can bring to a story will just enliven a book in a way that AI at this point doesn't have the ability to do, in terms of understanding aging, in terms of understanding irony, in terms of understanding subtext and emotion. Mm-hmm. So I just want to make that little plug that you can find a narrator for $0.
Yeah, I think that's really important to highlight, because, you know, big fan of human created art here. So that includes human narrators. And I know, at least from when I first started looking at like just how much audiobooks cost, it initially does look very intimidating until, like you said, you can dive into all of the different options that are available to you. And so, yeah, thank you for highlighting that. All right. Well, I am going to open up the floor to any audience members who want to ask questions. And then I think maybe Ash, I'll let you pick one last question from our document. And then, we'll get you out of here.
I know we're coming up against our time deadline, but if you want to ask those last questions, I'll try to be fast in answering.
Sure. So I'll keep it easy. Quick fastball question. What is your favorite genre to narrate? Do you have one?
I don't have a favorite genre. I feel like the great pleasure of this job is that I get to work in all genres. I mean, most people know me for my fantasy work and lit RPG work, but I work under a bunch of different names. My genres are all sort of aligned with a different narrator persona. Mm. So I love the variety. I think there is not one that I love more than another. What I love is mixing it up. Mm. I think I am most drawn to fiction. I don't love narrating nonfiction, and I am particularly drawn to first-person narration. I think it lends itself so beautifully to the audio format. But yeah, everything.
I love it. Is there anything last that like you would like to say to the audience, or anything, any other advice you'd like to give before we sign off for the day?
Oh, gosh.
Broad question.
Thank you.
Broad. It's okay if you don't. You, it's listening. Totally fine.
Thank you. No, it's okay. Thank you for listening to audiobooks. Thank you for supporting authors and narrators. I know that you guys had said that we might talk a little bit about advice for upcoming narrators. Mm. I'm happy to sort of fill in the blanks a little bit just for a couple more minutes there, if
yeah, of course.
You want to keep talking about that?
Yeah.
Totally.
I feel like I'm always, or I'm available as a resource to any narrator who is just starting out. So don't ever be shy about reaching out. I'm always happy to share any wisdom and experience I have. You can find me via my website, tessirondale.com, or on my Discord where I do live narration. That's a great place to interact with me because I can actually answer questions in real time. But I think for anyone who's starting out, the most important thing to do is to just listen to audiobooks and find a voice in audiobooks that you feel like aligns with your voice, a person who's doing the books you want to do and who has a voice that is similar to yours, and then listen to them and how they use it. I cannot stress enough how important coaching and training is, especially with AI. We sort of have to prove to listeners how valuable we are and what we can bring to it beyond just sort of rote reading of a book. So for people who don't come from an acting background, I think taking audiobook classes, not just to learn the basics of reading a book aloud, but to learn the basics of performance and connecting with a work in a grounded way is so key. And also, I think it's worth remembering that probably as with writing, everyone's sort of path to success isn't the recipe for all. I mean, a lot of narrators in the last few years have come up on TikTok or on Instagram and have become very popular that way. But that's not everyone's method of doing it. And there are a lot of different avenues to finding success in this. And also, it can be a full-time job if you want it to be. And I'd be happy to talk more on that subject, but that's a whole other can of worms.
Well, thank you for sharing that advice. I definitely did want to touch on that. I just didn't want to keep you too late. I know you're a very busy person, but we do really appreciate you taking the time to educate our audience about the audiobook narration process and us as well. There's a lot that you talked about that I just didn't even think of today. So it's been super insightful. And just thank you for being our very first narrator guest. It's been a pleasure.
Of course. Were there any audience questions that you wanted to throw at me?
I didn't see any come in, but if we get any like on the YouTube video comments wise or anything like that, I'll forward them your way and let you know for sure.
Okay, cool. I'm just curious because you guys both came and listened to me in the booth today. What was it like listening to the live process of audiobook making?
I enjoyed it. It was very cool. I've never done that before, so it was interesting, especially when I heard you do like a couple retakes on certain lines. It was like the different ways you could approach them, and then also when you were like communicating with one of the authors about the typos, I thought that was really nice. Probably makes it more efficient too, I imagine, to catch those live. But I thought it was very insightful. How about you, Ash?
Yeah, same for me. It was really impressive how you would catch yourself. I mean, to me, I would hear like no issues, but you would correct and then adjust and then like answer questions in the chat and do that simultaneously. And I was just very impressed at the ease in which you did that. It's very clear that you like love what you do and you love engaging with your audience. So it was just overall great experience.
Oh, good. Well, thanks for visiting. And thank you so much for having me on. This flew absolutely by. It was really nice chatting with you.
Yeah, you as well. And we will be sure to share the link for the recorded version with you so you can share with anyone in your audience who wasn't able to make the live.
Fantastic. I will absolutely do that. People will be really excited. I don't do a lot of interviews, so I've got a lot of listeners who are excited about this.
Yeah. Awesome.
Well, thanks for choosing us.
Thanks.
It's been a pleasure. And we will let you get back to your very busy schedule, and I hope you all in the audience and you, Tess and Ash, I hope you all have a great day.
You too. Thanks guys.
Have a great night, you guys.
Bye.